B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Man, it doesn't show
signs. Nice, isn't it? Stopping. I open my door. I see the frost.
Oh, it doesn't
the snow.
I've seen that move.
Upon the cars, down my city street, and the city sidewalk, as a matter of fact. When we finally and I was instantly annoyed. And you know what? It's not because I look at it as, oh, it's snowing, I gotta fight the traffic or whatever. I just, people love bitching about snow. They love it.
It's amazing. We do live in the Northeast, right?
It's amazing.
I love the snow.
Yeah.
Florida,
you love the snow?
Love the snow.
Nice.
So awesome.
I like snow. I love a big snowstorm.
Snow fight time.
You got your scarf on. You're all ready, man.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready. I love this time of the year.
For people on that aren't on Twitch, unfortunately, people that are not on Twitch, he's got a top hat. He's got a corncob pipe. He's got a scarf thrown about his shoulders.
And a tiny tin cane.
He's ready to go. He's ready to go, ladies and gentlemen. No, people always bitch about the weather. And I don't know if it because I went to Catholic school or what, and I never would check the weather.
What was your number?
512, I believe.
558. Yeah. I can't remember mine.
Ours changed.
There's a number.
You
didn't have that in Florida.
Oh, yeah, try. Yeah, this
so
is great.
So in snowstorms, they would call your school off by a number.
Oh.
So it would go. And now in Burlington County, 551, 553, 554, if you heard your number, you were off of school.
So you'd literally sit by the radio and be like, come on, 550. Come on, snow day.
Come on, big bucks, no whammies, no whammies. 2 hour delay, damn it.
Yeah.
2 hour delay was like, oh, come
on. It was pointless.
Yeah. Just call it.
Such a tease.
Just call it. It was like the umpires discussing whether or not it was raining. Like, just call it. We all know what's happening. No, but my mom was a saint and is a saint, and she would listen to the radio as my brother and I were getting ready because, God forbid, we were late for school. So, yeah, the number usually sticks with people, not with me, because Eleanor was on duty.
Ah.
Yeah, she was like, all right, you guys have a 2 hour delay.
Yeah, my parents had me when they were like 70, so I had to do everything myself. It was, you know.
They already retired.
I was in first grade. Get yourself up, get yourself ready, and listen to the radio in case you're off of school.
Your parents had
and
retired.
Don't wake us up.
Your parents had retired from parenting.
I never knew my parents to work. Yeah, work, do anything for me, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I was talking a little bit before the show, and I think my voice sounds a little bit more strained than I thought it did, so.
My
apologies. It's airborne.
You sound awful, Mark.
They coughed.
I tried to offer you some of my medications that I carry in my bag.
It's been a while.
It's like a nice little plethora of things that I carry in my bag.
Just don't take one of those things that I took for your back.
Oh, that thing that gave you like
almost
convulsions. So Bob's over there in a cold sweat, it appears. Is he okay? But you know what, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have some fun today. 6:30 today, we're going to speak to a former NFL front office executive, now an analyst for the NFL Network, Charlie Casserly. We haven't talked to him in a little over a year. And the last time we talked to Charlie, I think he was making breakfast. So we're gonna see. And now he carried off the conversation.
He started in the bathroom.
Allegedly.
I
don't want to throw.
Looks at me and goes,
dude, he's in the bathroom.
Yeah, definitely was in the bathroom.
I don't want to throw any type of negativity the man's way, but I will say he at least was making breakfast.
Yeah.
I allegedly in the bathroom starting his day. But he was definitely making breakfast. We heard the pots and pans. We heard like an egg drop on the counter or something like that. I don't know what it was. But it's something, he was frying up the bacon. I don't know what was going on. But I'm pretty sure he was making breakfast. So we'll talk to him at 6:30. Then at 8 o'clock today, we'll talk to Adam Schefter. Now, it's a big day today to talk to Adam Schefter because there's some injury news out there for the Eagles. And we need to have it either confirmed or denied. Alshon Jeffrey, most likely done for the season. He has been your most reliable wide receiver this season. However, with Alshon Jeffrey comes a great deal of drama. And I rather have him than not have him. But if you're not going to have him, you start looking for reasons to be optimistic. And he has been a guy that has been surrounded by a lot of drama throughout this season, even going back to last year. Is there any chance, Trey, I'm going to start out of the gate with a question to you. Is there any chance a guy that has caused some drama over the years in Philadelphia, him not being available for Carson Wentz, is there any chance him not being there is a positive for Carson to be spreading that football around a little bit more?
Possibly.
You know, because here's the other guys that seem like they want to get out there on the field, just because of what you saw on Monday, that these guys were hungry. Some of the guys that got an opportunity to go out there and make some plays, all right, here you go. You get an opportunity. And then, you know, you don't have those crazy looks if you make a pass that, you know, might not be exactly where he wants it to be. All right, hey, let's go. I need guys that want to be out there with me.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other part of this is that Lane Johnson is now day-to-day.
That sucks.
He has a high ankle sprain.
Yeah.
He got a high ankle sprain last year against the Giants at the Meadowlands in the first game that they played, and we all thought, oh, man, he's going to be tough playing through this one. He played through it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, if I had to guess, he doesn't play Sunday. If I had to guess, they rest him against the Redskins.
Yeah.
No, Ryan Kerrigan makes that a much easier decision.
Yeah,
makes it a much easier decision.
And he didn't affect the line, did he? I heard you mention that in the 5 o'clock
hour. No, but it did.
Kerrigan
jump.
May have, right?
Usually.
What, 4 to 5.5?
I've heard bookmakers say that usually the only players that affect lines are quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be surprised if Kerrigan, but that matchup has been so crazy.
Yeah.
I'm sure they look at that, but yeah, and the 99.9%.
It's probably just movement on the Eagles.
Yeah. Exactly. So you're looking at things trying to shape up for this game and how you attack the Redskins, or rather how you prevent them from attacking your quarterback. And there's a couple of suggestions out there to take over for Lane Johnson. One is Halapulavati Vaitai. All right. I think that makes the most sense. The other is what they tried last time, Andre Dillard.
Nope. Don't do it.
No, I thought JP had suggested that he was going to switch over.
So yesterday during the press conference, I forget who it was, but they asked Doug Peterson during his press conference, so if Lane can't go, Jason Peters kind of volunteered his services to take over at right tackle. Any chance you would have him go out there? And it was about the roundabout way of talking? No. like although your Hall of Fame left tackle backhandedly, backdoor-wise, said that he would go over there after the game. It's, oh, I would have played for Lane if it was going to be like that. And now that that's out there and there's another opportunity to start for Lane, anybody here entertaining the idea of Jason Peters playing left right tackle?
No.
No.
I agree with that.
Okay, good.
He hasn't been in a right-handed stance since his rookie year.
Mm.
Yeah, no.
And the guy in his rookie year was already struggling with being in that right-handed stance. I can't imagine what a guy would do after, 14 years going to the right side all of a sudden?
Mm-hmm.
I think the best thing for the Eagles in this is Vaitai starts at right tackle.
Yeah, just let Vaitai.
And just let him roll from that point on. Now, the other thing today that's pretty wild, when you get into everything that happened yesterday, from football even to the baseball world, right in the middle there was an actual game being played. And that game being played was by the 76ers, who improved to 13-0 at home. And there were two things that really stood out in this game. One was the play of Matisse Thybulle. That man looked like he had been in the NBA 10 years. He looks comfortable. My favorite thing about rookies is that they don't overreach. They don't try to play out of themselves. They play within themselves. Those are the good ones.
Real quick, I just have to correct myself. I'm sorry. It went from 6 to 4.5. It's gone the other way. Not 4.5 to 6. My bad. Apologies.
Copy that. So you're looking at what happened yesterday in the and that's for the Redskins line and the Eagles.
Yes.
Line. So when you're looking at this game yesterday, Matisse Thybulle never overextends his game. He never tries to do too much. He stays within himself, as all good rookies should. And that's been the most impressive thing about him. Obviously, his just bottom line is play. If you don't know he's a rookie and you're just watching him play, he's such a good defender. And he's hitting that three now with some consistency from the outside. And he's not afraid to drive to the basket. He's not afraid to do a little give and go with a teammate. He is just a man playing the game. And that's great to say about a rookie. It's great to see it from a rookie. The other thing, I never thought I'd be this happy to see another man so happy. When Joel Embiid threw that ball over his right shoulder and got the N1 and went to the line, when's the last time he smiled on a basketball court?
Yeah.
Karl Anthony Towns, to answer the question. The Karl Anthony Towns fight earlier in the season was the last time I saw that man smile on a basketball court. It's the only time he is at top-notch play. The only time he is at that MVP status. Now, he didn't look like an MVP yesterday, but still, just to see him enjoy the game again, it was the JoJo that we all missed. Like, I remember seeing that, and I tweeted out even during the game. You know, that's what we want to see from Joel Embiid. We want to see a guy enjoying himself. And after the game, when he was asked about it, he said he needed to get back to that. But he also said something along the lines of, that part of my game is being cut out, implying somebody else has the scissors cutting that portion of his game out.
Yeah, I didn't know how to read that either, and I didn't like it.
I think our gut instinct, our gut reaction is the right one, which is somebody else is telling them to knock the hell off.
Yeah, and I could see if it's after the fight that you referenced, the Karl Anthony Towns fight, that Elton went up to him and said, hey, social media stuff, knock it off. Like, grow up. Stop with that. And I could see Elton being, like, not sugarcoating it. Listen, big man, that's stupid. Don't do that. The fight and everything, those things happen, whatever. But knock it off with the stupid thing. I could also see Joel misinterpreting to, oh, I can't do anything. Like, you know how a little kid, sometimes you'll tell him something, oh, don't do it, and they'll overreact to, oh, you said I couldn't do that, you know? I wonder if Joel kind of took it that way. But I was ultimately excited last night at what he had to say after the game. Ultimately, I was excited.
Ultimately,
what
you were excited. Why? Yeah. Did he have to get back to it?
I think he kind of now is, all right, I got to have fun again. I got to be me. Referring to they cut it out or it got cut out or whatever it is, I think we're going to see the old Joel Embiid again, having fun on the floor.
That guy's the MVP.
I think he's realized it.
I don't know. Players find odd places to get motivated. We talk about it all the time, Trey, when we're talking about coaches. Oh, they got to motivate this guy, his coach. What the hell is he doing? But most of the time, it's the player that has to motivate themselves. Joel Embiid, when he's not happy-go-lucky, when he's not feeling loose on the court, that's when he's at his worst. And we've been talking about it all season, that he hasn't looked like that same type of player. The passion for the game does not seem like it's there. If he's got to trash talk, if he's got to get somebody's face, if that's what he's got to do to enjoy playing again, hey, man, have at it. Because I'll tell you what I'm tired of right now. I'm tired of him trying to build his confidence by taking the basketball 15, 20 feet away from the basket and then working his way down and turning the basketball over.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to find that motivation, doesn't he, Trey?
Well, yeah, I'd rather him play inspired, you know what I'm saying? Because, with motivation, you're looking for outside influences to get you there. So if you can get out there and play some inspired ball, that's something where when we had Aaron McKee on, where it was more of you wanting to go out and be the best every time. You want to be that champion. You want to be the league MVP. That's when you're talking inspiration. When you're talking motivation, then you need everybody outside of you to get you going. So, whatever he needs to do to get himself to be that dominant force, to get back to having fun, be that. Do whatever you need to do. Well, except for the getting on Twitter and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
That's a little too much. But when it comes to you just going out there, whatever you got to do to get yourself up, to go out there and go dominate, do it. I'm all for it.
And you've said it often, Trey. He is their leader.
Yeah.
How he goes so good. Somebody needs to take him aside, and maybe they've already done this, and say, look, leadership doesn't mean you have to be that guy that goes around and talks to everybody else or be that serious guy on the floor. You can be a leader by having fun, averaging 27 and 14, and leading this team to 55 to 60 wins. That's a good leader. You don't have to be that guy that goes in the lot. Trey Thomas, I guarantee, was a phenomenal leader. And Trey, I didn't know you as a player going into the locker room, but I guarantee you were a leader in the way people watched you play 180 games and say, man, that guy suits up every week and plays.
Mm.
You didn't have to go over to everybody and put your stamp on and say, listen, young man, this is what you need to do.
No.
Joel Embiid can be a leader by having fun and averaging, having great numbers and leading team to 50 wins.
22 and 10 is what he had last night, and it still felt quiet.
Yeah, he had 10 in the first, 5 minutes, and then 12 the rest of the game.
Yeah, it was an odd game as far as that goes, and this was highlighted post-game. Now, I'd like to focus on the game because they won, again, 13-0 at home.
Unreal.
Sixers were great. And then, after the game, a bigger firestorm happened.
The bell ringer?
No.
Well, Matisse got it.
Matisse got the honor of the bell ringer. He was the ringer last night.
Ring that bell.
But I would say during the game, the firestorm was people being all lovey-dovey with Matisse Thybulle, including myself. And then after the game, it was all about Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal were acting as if Joel Embiid has lost everything. And people were outraged by it on social media. And I'm listening to it, and I'm like, did I just hear Charles Barkley say, I'm not out on the Sixers, but I'm close? And it was all because Joel Embiid was turning the basketball over too much? And look, we've harped on that. We've talked about that. It seems like after every single game now, we talk about whether or not Joel Embiid can stop turning the basketball over. And for the record, last night he had 4 turnovers. It wasn't 7 or 8 like we have seen him do previously in the season, the last couple of games especially. But all because of that, you're just going to be out on the Sixers? And they were talking about Jokic, about both those guys, both those big men, not being as dominant as they should be during the game. And it was like, oh, Charles Barkley is now hating on the Sixers. He didn't say anything that we haven't been saying all year anyway. The only thing that caught me off guard was when he said, yeah, I'm not out on the Sixers, but I'm close. I was like, really?
He said they're not in the same like stratosphere as the Bucks.
Well, we'll see. Christmas Day.
Yeah, you know how I read it, though? I read it like he's watching them, and much like I think the way we do, there's levels of the Sixers that just doesn't get better, and it's aggravating. It could go to Brett, it could go to the players, whatever. His first arrow probably goes to Brett, and the people we talk to, it does. The late games giving up leads, the stupid turnovers. Joel Embiid still thinking he can handle the basketball. Ben Simmons still not shooting. I think that's what I read with Barkley last night, saying he sees the same thing we do. Like, the frustration of the things that need to get better not getting better is what's making him say this. Mm-hmm.
And Shaq even said it last night. This is when you see 22 and 10, you might think, oh, that guy had a good game. But when it's Joel Embiid, no, that's got to be on a much higher scale. What they're able to do, dominating all it. The numbers are down for him from last year to this year. Numbers are down for Jokic from last year to this year. Numbers are down for even Ben Simmons from last year to this year. So when you look around and you see these guys that should be dominating, you don't see those dominant numbers. It's just a different story. When you know they can play that much better, even though they might be good for the average bear, they're not good for Papa Bear, so to speak. And that's what those guys are supposed to be. 610-632-0975. And then the two other things that took place yesterday that had nothing to do with actual action on a field of play. The transaction that happened was D.D. Gregorius.
Are you underwhelmed?
Coming to Philly. I told you last week.
I thought of you right away.
When I saw
this, and I didn't like that. I wanted to think about D.D. at Dingers at Citizens Bank Park.
And you're thinking about moi.
Yeah.
And then you were transitioning to how you have to like throw your computer away for spilling coffee on it.
Yeah, it's dark.
Sorry to bring it up.
Yeah.
But I knew you'd be excited about it. I'm not thrilled, but it's not like I'm like, oh, this guy, what the hell are you doing? It's a one-year deal.
I like that he's gambling on himself. That tells me he's got a lot to show.
Here's the only thing that like, I don't think he's hitting over 30 home runs here.
I think he's right around 30. Yeah, I think he's 30
and 31. Yeah, no. He had 27 last year, and that was in 130 games, maybe.
Yeah.
He's played 2 full seasons in 8 seasons in the big leagues. He's a shortstop who's had Tommy John surgery, which isn't that crazy or rare.
He's got the Henry Rowan Gardner arm. He's going to be stronger now.
Right, exactly. And I don't... He is going to hit homers. It's not going to be 30. I don't think he's going to get that high. He's not a crazy on-base percentage guy. 2 years ago, he had 335 on-base percentage, which is good.
Yeah, so he'll be like a 315, 320 guy at best.
That's generally where he is. But if he does hit with more pop at Citizens Bank Park, and it's hard for me to say, oh, well, he played at Yankee Stadium. That's not exactly cavernous. But if he does come over here and hit with a little bit more pop and a prove-it type of year and continues more of D.D. Gregorius from what we saw in 2018 with the Yankees as opposed to last year with the Yankees where he was dealing with an injury and all that, coming back from, I believe, the Tommy John surgery. If you're talking about that guy being motivated, getting into a little bit of a groove, maybe you see more walks, maybe you see him get on base just a little bit more. But ultimately, yeah, it's a good pickup. I'm not over the moon ecstatic over it. Underwhelmed, I wouldn't even say there. I'm just kind of like, okay, good pickup. It's not a huge game changer for me is what I'm saying. I don't like the domino effect, but we'll get to that in a second.
Oh. Huh. Well, this was a Joe Girardi. This goes hand in hand with hiring Joe Girardi. Mm-hmm.
The manager got you a free agent.
Yeah, exactly. Gabe Kapler's not getting, D.D. Gregorius.
Hey, he brought Sean Rodriguez in.
I come in today, and he's listening to Gabe Kapler the interviews.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, get over him. He's gone.
He was talking about Philly.
A little tear formed in his left eye and started coming out. The game pride is still there. But if you get 275, right, 25, and 80 out of your shortstop.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take that. Yeah, like really good. I'll take that to the tune of 14 one year.
And then Scott Kingery now becomes your third baseman.
No, that can't happen.
For the
Seriously, that can't happen.
For the third consecutive year, Scott Kingery will be playing out of position. I'll say this about Scott Kingery. Every position they've put him in that's not second base, he has gotten incrementally better as the season has gone on, which is good. It's not great, but it's good, right? I don't want him starting at third base.
No.
I know Gene Segura has a no-trade clause. It's full and all that stuff. Stranger things have happened in baseball. If you could put Scott Kingery at second, please just make something happen as far as that's concerned. If you could use Gene Segura in a trade to get another pitcher in here, please make that happen. If you could get Alec Bohm up here sooner rather than later if he's ready, then please make that happen. But the domino effect that falls through this is not a positive one. Now, you upgrade the shortstop position, especially because Gene Segura had a bad year last year. Very much a down year. He's not what you traded for when he got him from Seattle. So if you can make that happen to keep Segura at, or you know, keep Scott Kingery at second base, or at least put him there permanently, then I'm hoping Matt Klentak has something up his sleeve where he can pull that off. The other thing that happened yesterday, Trey, that was, it was interesting. Because if anybody says this, it's a hot take. But if the head coach says this about his player, it's eyebrow raising. Yesterday, Doug Peterson called Carson Wentz's performance Sunday against the Giants his greatest performance ever. Against the Giants.
Okay.
Carson Wentz has played some pretty good football games in his life. He's played some pretty good football games in his NFL career. Last 2 years ago, 2017, you get a slew of them, right? A whole slew of them. I was thinking back. I was like, all right, well, what really ranks up there as far as Carson Wentz's best performances? 2017, Carolina, Thursday night. They win that game. Remember that? That was pretty good.
That was awesome.
Defense had a good stand in that game as well. Uh-huh. The game he got hurt in L.A.
Oh, phenomenal.
You know, people forget, he had four touchdowns before he left that game.
He had three before he tore his ACL and then one after.
Exactly. The other one was, you know, last year against the Giants was pretty damn good as well. And you know what? After that game, after the Giants game last year, they played against Carolina, and he played phenomenally well. Remember, it was the defense that gave up three touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and they ended up losing that game.
Uh-huh.
He's played better. Can you say, Trey, against a terrible defensive team, a terrible secondary that had allowed a 101 opposing quarterback rating throughout the season, can you say Carson Wentz has put out his greatest performance in his career?
This was his first comeback, right?
First fourth quarter comeback. Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
First overtime, I know that.
First overtime, too, huh?
Mm.
So he kind of silenced the critics with just being that clutch guy?
For now.
See,
for now.
That whole silence.
Yes. For I'm now. Going with Doug on this one.
You're going with Doug. Wow. Really?
And you.
Why did you laugh after that?
I don't know.
Because he doesn't believe it.
But he was good. But here's the thing. Anytime you do have to, and I thought we did a good job of mentioning this yesterday. Anytime you have a good performance from something, you always have to evaluate who it's against. Right?
Yeah, I thought that was just a ridiculous statement. Sorry.
Yes, it was
and I
best.
Like, I'm not, I feel more optimistic about the Eagles than I did yesterday because I had a good night's sleep, but.
You were cranky yesterday, Bobby?
Yeah. He had a good half of football. He had a good half.
Uh-huh.
And overtime. I mean, you mentioned three or four games, Mark, off the top of your head. You didn't even mention one that came to the top of my head, which was that Monday night Washington game.
Washington, yes,
that
definitely.
I mean, my God, the guy, that's just a crazy statement. You're trying to get your quarterback to a place where he was in 2017. I think by taking the cover off of him a little bit and letting him be athletic in that second half against the Giants started that. So I think this is just a little push in the hiney to say, like, that was your best game ever. Do it again, please, next week.
We'll play this sound for you a little bit later. But Doug was hot taking me. That's what he was doing.
Exactly.
He was. I was like, look at the head coach.
He was thinking of you when he did.
Yeah, the coach was hot taking me. I'm listening to this and I'm going, really? This is like I understand.
Best performance ever.
You want to talk about meaningful? Meaningful could be the most meaningful performance he's ever had. I mean, save the season. By the way, I did watch the game again yesterday. I was amazed at how Carson was on those three touchdown drives. Do you know the numbers people were putting out there? We even put it out yesterday. His numbers in the fourth quarter and overtime, how they were like off the charts and great and all that stuff. Just looking at those drives, those touchdown drives, do you know how many incompletions he threw? I'll tell you right now, he threw 17 passes. You know how many incompletions he had in those three drives? 17 passes. Two. Ah. Two incompletions. So he was 15 of 17 for about 143, I want to say, and three touchdowns on those scoring drives. That's pretty damn clutch. Pretty damn clutch.
And according to Dan, some of those passes were because, you know, he was trying to put the ball where only the receiver could catch it.
Oh, Dan Orlovsky.
Yeah.
A friend of the show. Yeah.
He loves him some Carson Wentz, man. Carson could throw a worm killer, and he'd be like, well, that was the right play because he was getting dirt off the ball. He'll always have.
He was trying to trim the grass there.
He was setting up the next play.
Exactly. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. Coming up, we'll talk to Charlie Casserly, see what the Eagles could be thinking as far as any roster transactions going forward, and who this Eagles team is, and also, from a national perspective, what this Eagles team could do in the NFC East, because it's very much, as we know, up for grabs. A little later this hour, Ross will let you hear from Doug Peterson his hot take on Carson Wentz and how he played on Sunday. 610-632-0975. Time of the Fanatic is 622.
Farset and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
6 o'clock hour here on 97.5 The Fanatic, brought to you by United Rentals Power and HVAC. For all your power generation and HVAC rentals in the tri-state area, visit unitedrentals.com. Right now, Janet Snakel, good friend of the show, is telling me that I sound like I've had too many camels.
That was a favorite in the Cooney household.
The camel cigarettes?
Some camels?
Yeah, my parents were camel smokers for a while. Yeah,
I don't know.
I thank them for that.
I never really got into the cigarettes. It's an occasional
never
cigar.
Never smoked anything. Yeah,
I enjoy a fine cigar.
You like a cigar? Yeah,
I love a cigar. Absolutely. And then,
but
John,
unfiltered cigarette.
John's telling me I sound like Joe Buck.
Oh, nice.
I don't see. You know, I know I don't sound like, because the man's got a velvety voice himself. From the NFL Network, joining us right now here on 97.5 The Fanatic, on our fantastic Fanatic guests and appearing on the Comcast Business Hotline, Charlie Casserly joins us right now. Good morning, Charlie.
Hey, good morning, man. How are you?
We're doing well. Great. You know, the Eagles saved the season on Monday Night Football against the Giants, so they live to fight another day. I'm curious, you know, we're trying to figure out here in Philadelphia as to what the Eagles are, because they've been so inconsistent after such high hopes to start the season. From more of the national perspective, Charlie, how do you see this Eagles team?
I guess two things. One, their history is, but obviously Foles had a lot to do with it. In December stretch runs, playoff runs the last 2 years. Offensively, the receiving core is deleted, depleted, I should say, and deleted, I guess.
Definitely deleted, yes.
And you know, and they're just piecing it together. Losing Jordan Howard was crucial, that was crucial to them. So the offense is kind of anemic at point right now, because of lack of players. You know, I think Wentz is a victim of that, a little bit of it. He made more plays outside the pocket in the past than he has this year. Holds the ball. We know about the fumbles. I don't know if he's a great anticipator. So part of it's him, and part of it's the people around him. You know, defensively, the secondary. I've always felt that was something that was an Achilles heel for him, the cornerback position primarily, and it continues to be. People say, hey, the front is excellent, hard to run on. Good pass rush. So, double Cox, get to the second, get to the cornerback position. And finally on offense, you got to double Ertz, take away the run early, and then they'll get away from it. But those are some of the things that are being said.
Speaking with Charlie Casserly of the NFL Network, you can also follow him on Twitter at Charlie Casserly. Charlie, the other thing is, you know, you mentioned Carson Wentz there. Do you think he's a guy that can still get back, even with average receivers? And he's had below average receivers, as you pointed out, already this season. Can he get back to that elite status that we saw from a couple of years ago?
I don't know why he can't. You know, I don't know the inner workings there of the coaching staff. They lost some coaches, and it's been written about quite a bit, who are good coaches. And you know, they replaced them with some other coaches and who are probably pretty good coaches, too. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But I just really look at personnel mostly because I'm not inside a building. And I'm saying, okay, who do you have to defend when you play the Philadelphia Eagles? Well, it's doubles Ertz. What else are we going to do? See? And I'm being a little sarcastic.
Right.
But there's a lot of truth in what I'm saying. And I think what they evolved to in the game the other night was, fine, we're going to throw it to Ertz. We're going to throw it to the running backs. Go stop us. So now people have a plan on that. And what can happen? Now, the good thing going for them, you know, the Cowboys have won a game. So, you know, they're not exactly rolling through things either here. So they got a chance.
Now, did you see the Eagles went into Monday night's game with three active wide receivers?
I did see that, yes.
What was your reaction to that? That just seems bonkers to me.
Well, you know, again, I'm not being on top of the thing because I cover all the teams.
Sure.
I don't know all the inner workings of whether they could have signed somebody and got in there. I think obviously the backup plan is use the tight ends there. And sometimes you get into a situation where, well, we know we'll have a guy back next week. We don't want to sign a person, saying that, you know, you might get somebody back. But yeah, if you go in there with three, you better plan on playing two at some point.
Now, you spent a lot of time, obviously, front office, GM, throughout the league. When it comes to just Howie Roseman, how would you evaluate his performance so far this season?
Well, you have to look at it in a big picture, okay? You know, Howie's done an excellent job there. No question about that. He's a big part of them winning the Super Bowl. And I've said he needs a statue, too, because it's been 1960 since they won another one. So, and that's true. So sometimes what happens to you, you have a good year, and sometimes you have a year that doesn't go as good. DeSean Jackson was a tremendous signing. And obviously on opening day, we all thought, boy, this thing looks good now. And then obviously it hasn't worked out. So, you know, sometimes you have things like that are beyond your control.
Speaking with Charlie Castro, you guys also have for the NFL Network 100 all-time team going on right now. NFL 100 all-time team. That's going to continue on Friday at 8 o'clock Eastern time in the NFL Network, revealing the offensive linemen now, as well as the tight ends. We got Trey Thomas in studio with us right now. He wasn't such a bad offensive lineman.
Oh, hell, I hated the guy when I was with the Redskins.
That's the biggest compliment you can give, Charlie.
That means he was good.
That's right.
Thank you.
Oh, he was tremendous. Hell, he wouldn't have been a politician, was he? I mean, in Congress, not as a player.
No, that was John. That was
his twin,
other side. But he probably pissed you off too. No, Trey. Well, Trey, his next venture is politics. Don't you worry.
No.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
It's all good.
Charlie, real quick. So obviously 6-7 is what's leading the division right now in the NFC East. Got 3 weeks left, including in a week, the Eagles. A week from Sunday, the Eagles and the Cowboys will face off for the division. Who do you see most likely taking this NFC East?
You know, and every time I've been asked that question, I've said Dallas because the superior talent in more areas than the Eagles are, especially with the Eagles' injuries. But you got to win a game. And the Eagles are home. And right now, I'm going to go with the Eagles because of the schedule. And it's not because I'm doing a show in Philly. I don't have any shows in Dallas today, so I don't have to worry about that. But, you got to win a game, man. And the Eagles showed something the other night.
All right.
It was the Giants, but they got to play the Giants again anyway.
Exactly. So hopefully two more easy W's. No easy W's in the NFL, but hopefully this one, the Giants, you'll get them. Charlie, always great catching up with you. Thanks so much for joining us. Charlie Cashley, NFL Network. Once again, NFL 100 all-time team. The series will continue on Friday, 8 o'clock Eastern time on the NFL Network, revealing the offensive linemen and the tight ends. Thanks, Charlie.
Hey, great to be with you. It's always fun to talk in Philly.
Definitely. Thanks, Charlie Cassidy, ladies and gentlemen. 610-632-0975. Trey, a little politician run, maybe the political run?
Nah.
I could be your campaign manager.
Nah.
Everybody else sucks. Vote for this guy. How's that? How's that slogan?
Yeah.
I've done those interviews where you totally get, you get a little confused as to who's who.
Yeah.
It's never a great moment.
Nah, it's kind of.
But he played it off. 610-632-0975. Coming up, we'll let you hear from Doug Peterson yesterday at the news conference, and something that I believe he was hot taking us a little bit. Time of the Fanatic is 640.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Still no politics, Trey? Still steering clear?
Oh, yeah, no. Way too many skeletons in the closet.
Well, here was the most impressive thing with Carson Wentz, and coming up at the top of the hour, we'll let you hear from Doug Peterson yesterday during his press conference. When it came to his game against the Giants, early on, he looked very shaky against a terrible secondary, a god-awful secondary. And then in the third and fourth quarter, he started to gain some consistency. The game plan started to change a little bit, whether that was him or Doug Peterson saying to go up tempo. I assume it was the coach.
Mm-hmm.
They go up tempo. He starts to look a heck of a lot better. They get him out of the pocket. He starts to look a heck of a lot better. And Bob, you mentioned the game against the Redskins on Monday night in 2017, where he had that incredible escape, mm-hmm. ran up right up the middle through the pocket, essentially, through the offensive defensive line, and threw the ball down the field for about a 20-yard gain. It was incredible. Talk about escapability. That was one of the best I've ever seen of any quarterback ever. It was that good on that Monday night game. This past Monday night against the Giants, he had a couple of those plays where he had a blitzer running him down dead to rights. And he was able to avoid the tackle and try to make a play downfield. Sometimes it worked out. Sometimes it was just an incompletion. But he did avoid the sack. There are other bad sacks he took. There are also a couple that he avoided. That's when Carson plays his best version of football. Why does it seem like Doug Peterson takes so long to put him in those positions? I mean, we've been calling for read options. We've been calling for moving around the pocket, manipulating the pocket, getting him outside to throw the ball downfield. We've been calling that for that all season long. And it took a game against the Giants with the season on the line to try to get Carson going again. Why is it that when we watch these games as outsiders now, why is it that we have to question what's going on in the practice squad when you see guys struggling at the wide receiver position, most notably, all throughout the season? And why is it we question the game plan? And I, for nothing, make some suggestions on this very radio program, and then they go out and they actually put those, they put those suggestions out there, and they actually work. Why does it take so long for the team that's in the middle of all this to realize this is the best version of that football team? Why does that take so long?
I don't know, and I go back to the guy carrying a sign down at the Eagles practice facility saying, roll the blunt. You know, I mean, when they didn't run the LeGarrette Blount one official time in that Kansas City game that they lost there in 2017. Mm-hmm. It's been that. It's been calling on personnel. Where's the run game? You know, after the third game, I think we all agreed. We're like, all right, Carson's healthy. Let the athlete come out in Carson Wentz now. But for some reason, Doug Peterson's making him a pocket quarterback. He's at his... I think Carson's still a very good quarterback, maybe, and you know, can get to the level that we all talk about. But he's at his worst probably when he's just a pocket quarterback.
Well, he's just a drop back passer.
And you have receivers that can't get open, right? Do we all agree on that? Except for Zach Ertz, So why not buy them some extra time to get open by rolling him out, by letting doing something to make it easier for them to get open? I don't get it a little bit.
We've watched this defense give guys room to make catches. We've seen that, and we've made the suggestion. We've pleaded for this team to play up on the line of scrimmage a little bit more. They started doing that, Trey. You pointed it out yesterday. Uh-huh. They started doing that a little bit more in the second half to give them more time to get after Eli Manning. Thank God they made that adjustment. But with this Eagles team, it's like you can't have that second and a half read and release from your quarterback, either because he's not processing the information fast enough, which seemed like what Charlie Casserly was getting to, or he wasn't, I don't know, maybe the receivers aren't getting open that fast. And I would lean more towards the wide receivers not being able to make the play than the quarterback, because it's been such a problem for everybody that's been lining up on the line of scrimmage for this team. What do you do, Trey, with a team like this? When we're on the outside looking in at this, when we and we see the best version of this offense, especially with Doug, as you'll hear in a second, talking about how this team took that step forward when Carson started getting it going. Well, as a head coach, why aren't you putting him in that best position where he is at his best?
Well, now, the times that we're saying, okay, he's at his best was when protection broke down and then, you know, he has to scramble around and try to make something happen. Now, yeah, you can have some of those sprint rights where it's a roll, a designed rollout, but there the other times where it's protection breaking down and he having to scramble around and I got to, you know, get out here and try to make something happen. He's dodging defenders that have gotten free from their blockers. So now he has to get out there and make something happen. Yeah, you can call some sprint rights. You can do a couple of little plays to kind of get him out of the pocket. But then you have to be careful because you don't want to expose him to some of those big hits because of how he is. He feels like, you know what? Oh, I can duck this guy, but you don't see that other end coming that's going to have that has a bullseye on you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he goes up and he'll do that little jump up in the air pass and he's taking a 300-pound defensive lineman to his chest. So, you know, you kind of have to protect him a little bit in that way, but I'm okay with the times where he's like, all right, you know what? Hey, there's protection that broke down. Let me get out here and go make something happen. Get rid of the ball. Bam, there we go. But now you need your receivers to understand too. Hey, I'm scrambling. You need to work in a way that I can try to get the ball to you.
Now, I understand that when he is dodging tacklers, that's not part of the game plan. That's not what they're... All right, now this is what's going to happen. The linebacker's going to come up. You're going to duck under him. Mm-hmm. You're going to make a miraculous throw downfield. That's not how they drew it up.
Yeah.
But they do draw up the hurry-up offense.
Yeah.
They do draw up no huddle. Mm-hmm. And that's when Carson seems to feel like, or at least he looks like a guy that is willing to be a little bit more athletic because he's in that rhythm. The body's moving. He's not afraid to, you know, roll out to his right. Now, the sprint rollout that they used in the goal line was the same one. I believe, if it wasn't the same, it was very similar to the Golden Tate touchdown in Chicago that put him up. So it was good to see that, although it ended up getting batted down. But I wouldn't mind seeing more of that with Carson.
Mm-hmm.
Why not use a little bit more of the read option where he holds on to one like he did against the Vikings and he was able to rip off 25 yards? Why not use his athleticism more, whether that's in the hurry up, whether that's sprint rollouts, or whether that's allowing him to wander outside the pocket?
Now, I like him when he goes no huddle because it just seems like, all right, hey, let's go. Just like how you were saying, right, let's go, keep pushing, let's get up on the line. It keeps them going, it keeps him into it. It's like, all right, let's. He's probably one of those type cats that he can't have that down click. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I agree with you.
He's one of those guys that his mind has to constantly be, all right, let's go, move up to the line of scrimmage. Next play, Doug is telling them to play, and then he gets up there, sees what the defense is presenting. If that play is good, cool. If not, then he'll call an audible. All right, let's go. So maybe that suits him a lot better to go. I think when you can put him on the center, he sees the field a little bit better instead of being in a shotgun formation.
Yeah, he seems just a lot more comfortable. He seems like he's in a position where he can take charge more, mm-hmm. and that's when he's at his most comfortable. Now, the thing that we were kicking around as far as these other wide receivers stepping up with injury and all that, like Greg Ward, when I watched the game yesterday, I knew that there was a point where they ran trips left a couple of times. I can't remember too many instances where a team ran trips left with one wide receiver. It was in overtime. They ran trips left with Josh Perkins. Well, it was Greg Ward on the outside. Then it was Josh Perkins, and then it was Zach Ertz. And then I think Dallas Goedert was actually on the right side of the football field.
That was on the touchdown to Ertz?
I think it was another time. I think it was leading up to that moment.
Okay.
But it was in overtime. And I'm like, this is who this guy has to work with right now. And I think it was our friend Zach Rosenblatt of NJ.com that pointed this out. Josh Perkins had 5 catches in this game.
Yeah, on 5 targets.
Nelson Agholor hadn't had a 5-catch game, I think since week 3.
Maybe.
Like, think about that for a second. And that's what Carson was working with. A lot of times we'll talk about him trusting his receivers. When he's able to move, it seems like he's not just having more control of the line of scrimmage or the pocket or with his own mobility, but it seems like he's got more confidence in rolling out to one side or the other and making that play downfield to somebody because that player, he has confidence, at least they want to make that play. Mm-hmm. Nelson Agholor, if you're a quarterback in the NFL and you're throwing to that guy, do you have confidence he's going to make that play for you? Do you have confidence he has that will, that determination to go up and make a play? Because I see Greg Ward at least trying to make those plays. And I'm surprised by how many people are throwing out that he dropped that touchdown pass in the fourth quarter. as I joked yesterday, yeah, welcome to the club. Like, a lot of these guys that have been playing a hell of a lot more than you, a lot of these guys that have far less of an excuse to drop that pass have dropped that pass for you. So, do I hold it against them? Anytime a wide receiver drops a touchdown.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.